Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Tom Murphy to the broadcast. Tom is the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer for AmerisourceBergen, an $80 billion pharmaceutical services provider. In May of 2008, he was assigned the additional responsibility for leading the company's SAP-enabled business transformation program. Prior to his time at AmerisourceBergen, Tom was the CIO of Royal Caribbean Cruises, the CIO of Bristol Hotels and Resorts, as well as having had IT leadership positions at Cendant Corporation, Omni Hotels, Interstate Hotels, and at Marriott Corporation. Tom has received many accolades, including being named a Top 10 Breakthrough Leader at the Global CIO Executive Summit in 2011, as well as being elected to the CIO Magazine Hall of Fame in 2010. Tom has a BA in English from the University of Richmond. I recently caught up with Tom in his office outside Philadelphia, and our conversation revolved around World-Class IT Principle 1, people, as we discussed the methods Tom has used to develop a strong leadership team, Principle 3, project and portfolio management, as we discussed how Tom met the challenge his colleagues presented him early in his tenure at AmerisourceBergen to prove a greater degree of value for the dollars invested in IT, and the governance practices that led to successfully instituting the broadest implementation of SAP anywhere in the world, Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we discussed how a degree in English has made him a better communicator with his colleagues inside and outside IT, as well as some other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com.
Thanks, Peter.
Well, Tom, I wonder if you could begin with a description of AmerisourceBergen's business as well as your role in it.
AmerisourceBergen is one of, I guess they're called the big three wholesale pharmaceutical distributors in the United States. McKesson and Cardinal are our primary competitors. I think you know Randy Spratt, a worthy competitor. We're an $80 billion organization revenue-wise and distribute in all 50 states as well as a significant portion of Canada. And we've got a small operation in the United Kingdom. My role is the Chief Information Officer for the drug company and the corporate offices. That makes up about 80% of all the revenues generated by AmerisourceBergen. And my responsibility has been over the last 3 years, a major business transformation enabled by SAP and has resulted in, I think, a significant accomplishment and success for the organization from a process and technology perspective.
Mm. And actually, continuing in that theme, I know that your implementation of SAP was one of the largest, if not the largest at the time that you were going through it in the world.
Right.
And obviously, you made it through and are still gainfully employed. So yeah. By some measures anyway, it's perhaps not without some scars or...
A lot of gray.
For those listeners who may be front end of embarking on a transformation of that sort, what kind of advice do you have for them? What lessons did you learn from that journey?
Well, there's a lot of them, and they will sound somewhat cliche, but I think, you know, cliches are grounded in truth. You know, the first is executive sponsorship. Really, the chief executive officer was the driver behind our decision to move to an ERP-enabled transformation. Getting the rest of the functional leadership involved and a part of the decision-making process was very important. We combined the IT professionals with business professionals from AmerisourceBergen to create the business transformation team, and having groups work side by side. And we literally tore down the walls of the physical workspace. We took everybody out of offices. We created a complete open office environment to try to create a, you know, an integrated, communication-rich environment. Then we brought in, at the time, Accenture and later IBM, as well as a lot of SAP professionals to work with us. And that open office made a lot of difference for us. So, you know, start out with that executive sponsorship and then create an environment for interaction and collaboration. And I think that's the key, and then set expectations very low.
Well, one of the things I'm always intrigued about when we learn about ERP transformations of one sort or another is there's some organizations that fall into the trap of believing that they are IT projects.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from our preparation that
this was certainly not just an IT project. As you point out, in fact, you went to the business, you involved them, you broke down some of the walls and typical barriers or silos between the organizations. Can you talk a little bit about that, ensuring that that the rest of the organization has the appropriate degree of ownership?
Well, and to tell the truth, the beginning of the business transformation initiative, you know, selling it really came through the information technology organization. But the CEO chose at the time the president of the drug company to come out of his role and take the role of chief integration officer for that very reason. He wanted it clear to the organization that A, this is the highest priority for the drug company and the corporate offices, and B, this is a business-driven initiative, not an IT initiative. About 4 months into that individual's effort, it became clear that he was probably not the best person to lead the initiative, and he left the organization, and I was asked to step into that role. So it was a real balancing act to come in and drive my vision, but also maintain a separation from IT. That's where having the business people involved really made a difference. But I'll be honest with you, throughout the course of the three-year journey, we had ebbs and flows of this is IT or, you know, no, this is business. No, this is IT. This is business. So it's complicated. And at the end of the day, I think the organization needs to assess its own maturity level and the capability or competencies of the person that they place into that leadership role. And the president of the drug company was a tremendous individual. He did not have strong program management competencies and lacked certain leadership competencies that proved to be critical for the role.
Makes sense. And it seems like, you know, as we think about the kinds of trends that are emerging across IT, whether it's the consumerization of IT or social media, there are a variety of topics where IT is at the center of how these processes or methods are delivered, or technologies literally are delivered, but they incorporate in the need for feedback from so many different parts of the organization. Do you see there?
Well, I think that's a great topic, maybe for another podcast, but I think it calls into question IT's relevance looking ahead. What we're dealing with now with the social computing and the ubiquitous computing and, you know, everything as a service and cloud and prosumerization of technology is not necessarily emanating from or being innovated through information technology. You know, we are catching it in many cases, and in some cases we are creating the contracts or the sourcing agreements or, you know, the nuts and bolts management. But if we're not careful, we're going to find ourselves becoming less and less relevant to the strategy and innovation of the organization as others bring these capabilities in and start asking, why not? So, you know, one of the things that I'm talking to my peer group about is we'd better be the ones asking why not and challenging our own internal status quo, or somebody else is going to do it for us.
Right.
Was the business transformation like that? You know, probably not quite as obvious. But if we had not brought the business process team members in and really made that commitment to have the business people driving the functional output of business transformation, we would not have been successful. And balancing that with the technical expertise was really, that was a huge challenge.
Yeah, sure. And what does that mean in terms of the kinds of resources as you look to the IT leaders of the future and developing your own leadership and developing the people who are several degrees down the ladder, but climbing the rungs nevertheless, what new skills are necessary in order to reach the imperative you just described?
Yeah, I think we're looking at, this is, you know, maybe a little bit soft, but I think EQ is incredibly important. And now I've always felt that way, but more than ever, I think the ability to create lasting relationships, to build trust, to connect effectively with your peer group in the business is becoming less of a nice to have and absolute essential to any C-level's success. But so some of the competencies that I'm trying to grow are around integration. So integration of people, process, technology, merger and acquisition integration, you know, SAP integration, everything's about integration now. Less and less is about building. So as cloud becomes more prevalent, as all these services become more prevalent, as application development becomes more enterprise app store, you know, how do you integrate that all together and drive value to the organization? So I think that is a core competency we need to continue to evolve and become expert in. And then, you know, I've said before, I think having a map of where you are and where you're going is really incredibly important. So a cartographer's competency, I think, is an important competency. And the one that I think many of us overlook, but is very important, is around sourcing, governance, and vendor management. More and more of our future, I think, is going to be, you know, like integration, knitting together the third party, all the different sources that ultimately provide the platform upon which your company operates. And having an individual or a group who really understands how to effectively source and contract those sources and create those vendor relationships and manage all of that stew of third party, I think, is going to be an increasingly sought after competency, mm-hmm. and one that we're actively growing here at AmerisourceBergen.
Did you see the rise of the development of vendor management office type?
Well, they're
programs?
Out there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. In fact, we're currently putting in Aptio, which is kind of an IT finance tool, with that in mind, that we really need to understand exactly where our costs are if we're going to effectively manage them. And it's going to get more complicated as this whole environmental stew gets messier.
Given the prominence of integration in your vision of the CIO's set of capabilities, something that rises very high, what does that mean in terms of the infrastructure you have in place? An organization of this size, certainly not speaking mm-hmm. about this company in particular, but one of this size typically has a very complicated web of infrastructure that they're managing. And the need to be able to plug and play and have a variety of different solutions that can be used by constituents throughout the organization would suggest the opposite, simplification in one form or another.
Well, but isn't that the paradox
that the
CIO is always, or you know, any of us in this role have wrestled with for mm-hmm. years, is the desire for simplification, but in many ways, paradoxically, simplification drives more complexity. So there's a big difference, I think, between simplicity to the user experience and the complexity required behind the scenes to create that sense of simplicity.
Yeah.
In the question that you're asking around integration, I do think, believe it or not, by implementing SAP, you know, we've gone from about 200, 300 major, you know, master applications down to about 77 when all is said and done. So we are simplifying our environment. Now, you know, it's more complex in virtual servers and in BASIS and Unix and those kind of places, but we've simplified from a legacy perspective tremendously. So it's complicated, but we are simplifying. And by having a standard, you know, quote, air quotes here, a standard operating environment with SAP should allow us to more easily plug and play, although that's a saying that nobody really likes, I think, in my business.
Fair enough. I was intrigued to find, we've done upwards of 90 of these interviews to date, and I believe you're the first person whose only degree is in English.
What do you mean only degree? That was a tough degree.
Meaning your highest level of education was in English. And I was very pleased, actually, first of all, to find that that's the case, and interested to hear about some of the advantages that that's brought to you. Clearly, your technology background is not rooted in your education background.
Right, absolutely.
Is ultimately the point. But part of it is you chose a path that in some ways very different than the typical computer science, engineering type background. What advantages have you drawn from being an autodidact when it comes to the technology, but also maybe perhaps drawing upon that, your ability to write?
Well, and I actually think, you know, of all things, and I've been very lucky, right? So luck has played a big part in this and worked very hard, but I think it's the single greatest contributor to where I am right now. And in a couple of ways, I do not appreciate nor enjoy technology for the sake of technology. I do not like to use the phone when I'm home. I'm not a guy who goes out and buys the latest gizmos and stuff. It takes me a long time to learn this stuff. And I frankly don't find it that interesting. And so I think that was a huge benefit as I was growing through the technology ranks of really seeing myself as a voice to the business user as opposed to being interested in the nuts and bolts behind things. Learning how to communicate effectively, I mean, really the CIO role is part salesperson, right? Part salesperson and part translator. The salesperson side of this, the ability to communicate effectively and put into context with great clarity, there is tremendous power in that, particularly when the people that you're selling to really don't understand nor have an interest in understand, you know, what's behind the black box or in that black box, right? So that's why I said EQ was also incredibly important. You have to be able to build a relationship and trust, But then you need to be able to articulate clearly why people should go someplace that they really don't want to go and spend money that they don't believe that they should have to spend. I think having an English major and, you know, all that that means in terms of being able to write effectively, being able to communicate effectively, that has moved me more than anything else.
That's wonderful. I think it's a great insight. So many technology leaders grew up programming and mm-hmm. understanding really kind of at its most fundamental level technology. But one can only be as successful as they are in communicating a vision and communicating, right. you know, what it is that they believe you are.
Well, if you want people to follow you,
there you are. Exactly, exactly.
You need to be able to do that. And you know, again, there's my upbringing isn't necessarily the right answer.
Sure.
You know, a developer's upbringing is not a bad thing, right?
Right, exactly.
And it's to me, it all comes down to those competencies, the leadership competencies, the emotional quotient, the relationships, the trust.
Has that meant that perhaps earlier in your career more than now that you were leaning on people who were deeper in technology?
Absolutely.
Through the
long
way?
I yeah. still do.
Yeah.
So, you know, my dad gave me two pieces of advice. One was to get an English major, and that's because I couldn't get into business school at the time. And the other was to hire people smarter than you. And, you know, by hiring people smarter than me and then freeing them to do what they do best, you know, you get the best of both worlds. And I get to do what I love, which is to lead people and run huge programs and, you know, do that kind of work. And my team members get to exercise those things that they're most excited about. You know, so my technology guy is totally jazzed by technology, and that's great. I want him to go get excited about that. And, you know, my program management guy just lives and breathes this stuff. God bless him. So, you know, that has been, and finding, you know, the downside to that is you really have to put a lot of your trust in people, and you got to know just enough to keep everybody honest, right? And that's always been, maybe I know a little bit more about technology than I let on, but that's important. I mean, the company is trusting me with, you know, in many cases, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of investments.
Right. No, that makes sense. We've talked a lot about your recent past, the IT transformation, the SAP implementation. What about the future? What are some of the things you're looking at as you look forward for the next year, say?
Our business transformation was a big bang back office, the source records. We took big bang and we're doing our customer online ordering environment on a distribution center by distribution center basis. So our customers, we've got about 30,000 customers and they're typically lined against a geographic location. So we have to touch every customer as we change out our customer order environment. And we're just this weekend going live with our fourth distribution center out of 25. So we've got deployments is really, you know, kind of job number one here. Very tactical, but we need to finish what we started. So the deployment of 21 more distribution centers is our first priority. We are introducing a lot of new enhancements, new capabilities to the SAP production environment. Candidly, we've been struggling mightily with reporting. Out of SAP, we are generating far more data than we had expected to generate when we were sizing this thing. So we're wrestling with that. We've just made the decision to implement a HANA environment, their compression data and solid state reporting environment. So we're putting that in right now. That's a big initiative for the drug company so that we can start generating highly detailed reporting down to the customer and line item level. We're rolling out Apptio, as I said. We've got a pretty aggressive bring your own device initiative underway. But where I'm focused mostly, so we got a lot going on over the course of the next year. The two things that I'm most focused on are delivering on the financial promises that we've made to the company. So we're going to have ABC is facing a tough, this is a tough year for us, our fiscal year 12. It's very important that the IT organization delivers, you know, on budget. Anything over gets allocated to the drug company, and that's a problem. So our financial responsibility is first and foremost in my mind. And then secondly is the stabilization of this organization. I mentioned IBS. As we came through business transformation, it was clear that we had to evolve an organization to support this new environment. So instead of the traditional IT organization, we kept the combination of technology and business professionals together. We felt that was very important to maintain the integrity of the SAP integrated environment that we now operate. So I have business functional process leaders, as well as technology and PMO and, you know, all the other things that you would expect to see. And we call it integrated business services. We're still in the, we're in the nascent stages of IBS as an organization. So we have a lot of work to do to stabilize the workforce, to create a motivating and exciting environment for them, and to manage the, what I guess I call the hangover of business transformation. You know, that was 3 very intense years of milestone-driven, you know, execution, lots and lots of hours, very heavy burden of responsibility on the team members. We still feel that, but we've kind of come out of the heavy lifting part of that, and we're trying to get back to whatever the new normal is, and we just don't know what it is yet. So, you know, my job as the leader of the team is to help kind of draw a picture of what normal now looks like and get us to a place where we can all execute and be a high-performance team again.
Makes sense. Well, also, as you mentioned earlier, making sure that that plan is clear to your constituents and colleagues, right, and peers around the organization.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to actually ask you a general question about IT trends, but I thought I might begin with one you just mentioned, which was BYOD, bring your own device. First of all, why are you embarking on that? And then, I guess, what benefits have you gotten or do you anticipate getting out of doing so?
Well, I view this as a resistance is futile kind of exercise. And actually, you know, I was a big proponent from early on. There are certain things that I want to get out of the game, right? I want to get out of the mobility device game. I want to get out of the laptop and desktop game. I mean, I just don't think it adds a lot of intrinsic value to the enterprise. So I'm a fan. I went to school on Kraft and a couple of other companies that I knew were doing this work very early in the trend. Now it's pretty straightforward. We're using an external company to do all of the management, you know, the online sourcing, all of the rules that we've created is all managed, you know, kind of outside of our four walls, which is fantastic. We introduced the Apple iPhone and the iPad to the environment last month. In February, we'll be lighting up other people's personal devices, as well as laptops. So, but we're all doing it through this third party, so we don't get caught up in the gross details. We engage the executive management committee, and actually, you know, some of the executives were the ones really pounding on the door early about why can't I do this, which was nice. So I'm a fan. I think that it's going to run its course. You're never going to have a scenario where you've got 100% of your workforce, you know, unless you're a small startup somewhere. So you're always going to have the enterprise responsibilities. But the more we can move outside of the four walls, I think the better. So I think it's more change, and that's what we're here for. I think there's some really cool other stuff going on that, frankly, is worthy of a lot more conversation. You know, BYO has become a very sexy kind of thing. Cloud's become a very sexy kind of thing. But we're experimenting with gamification right now inside the IBS organization. We're working with a company called Ripple that is taking, you know, the gaming concepts and moving them into the work environment. And studies are showing that there's tremendous upside to the organization if you can create a sense of competition and an achievement through gaming techniques around things as mundane as, you know, filling out your timesheets on a weekly basis, you know, I mean, just silly little things like that. But we're seeing dramatic upticks in compliance when we start to apply achievement orientations, even online badges and stuff that people enjoy earning. A lot more study to be done in this space. I think it's going to be a huge business through 12 and into 13. And I think it's got real opportunity for the enterprise.
Interesting. What were the early drivers of that? What brought that to mind? Gamification, some of its applications, or the nascent adoption of that was in a lot of B2C environments, obviously very different from this one. What parallels did you see that drew?
Well, we looked at it from an internal basis, and it honestly was a conversation about how can we increase compliance on time reporting.
Yeah.
You know, part of my transparent governance model is it's all based on an honest view of supply and demand within the workforce. In order to drive that, I need a high level of compliance, and not only compliance, I need accuracy in that reporting, because then I'm using that to go to the executive committee to sell. So we were trying to think of, you know, how can we get people to understand how important this is? And one of my managers, the manager who runs the basis team, was at a conference and saw a doctor, you know, a PhD, who's studying gaming. And he read her book, and he went to school on this and brought it into us, which is, it's a great point of pride that everybody in my organization feels like they can come forward with good ideas and sell them. And now he's running with it. I mean, this is his baby, and he's created an opportunity for us to really experiment. We've now taken it to HR and said, hey, we're playing around with this. What do you guys think? We've presented it to the executive committee. I mean, this has wheels. That's it's going to be fun.
Yeah, what an interesting example. Well, Tom Murphy, thank you so much for joining us in the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation. Great to get your insights, and thank you for sharing them.
Thanks, Peter, and thanks for doing this for the industry. It's great.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat believes in the value of a connected ecosystem to inspire innovation for tomorrow. To learn more, visit redhat.com. Listen to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information about these five principles and sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com. And please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our editor is Chris Davis, and our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.